This recording was made at Rosh Hashanah on Thursday, November 12, 1998, as Joan Friedberg spoke.
Thank you very much, Les, and thank all of you for giving me the opportunity to come here and talk to you about some of the things I find most compelling in my own life. I thought I'd begin by giving you a little background, tell you how Betty and I got started, and then describe how the program works, and take any questions, of course. Betty and I were both teaching children's literature at Pitt, and people began to ask us to come and do a workshop or a talk for PTA or a workshop for Head Start teachers on reading to children. At the same time, Betty was working on a book with Dr. Margaret Kimmel at the library school on sharing books with children, and she was doing a lot of research. The research showed very dramatically that children who become enthusiastic, fluent, capable readers most generally have the experience of being read to from very early on. They have had access to books, they have had people to read to them, they have had people to talk to them about books. They've grown up in an atmosphere that's rich with print. Well, as we began to give these talks to parents and teachers, we found they were always very eager to hear what had just been published and to see the books we brought. But we felt we weren't reaching the audience we really wanted to reach. Betty and I had very fortunate childhoods being read to by our parents. We had wonderful memories of that, and we had become readers very early in our lives. We felt that all children who would have had that kind of advantage could grow to be enthusiastic readers, but we didn't quite know how to reach parents who, for a variety of reasons, were shut out from this world. There are many people who find the public library, for instance, intimidating. Perhaps they've had bad experiences. They're afraid of losing the book and paying a fine. They might have had bad experiences as children and young people in school and feel very incompetent as readers, not able to reach their children. But we were convinced that most parents passionately want the best for their children and will do anything to get that. So we put our heads together, we talked to a lot of wonderful friends and supporters, and we came up with an idea called Beginning Books. We scrambled around and wrote a proposal. We'd never written a proposal before, we didn't know beans about it. And a budget, I think our first budget was something like $27,000, which to us seemed an enormous amount of money. And we got funding from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council and from Foundation and the Alcoa Foundation here in Pittsburgh. I might say, by the way, that we are very fortunate in Pittsburgh. We have very generous and affluent foundations, and Betty sometimes says she thinks it wouldn't have been possible for us to do this in another city without this kind of support. Anyway, we put together a program we call the Gift Book Program, which is still going on. It started in 1984. And in the initial pilot program, we had 1,000 packets like this. At that time, they had 4 paperback books. We now have 3. Paperback books that we chose because we felt they would be so compelling that parents and children alike would want to read them. And we tried to choose books that would not intimidate them, that would allow even a parent who has to say, I can't read, to share a book with her child. For instance, this one, Fish Eyes, a book you can count on. You don't have to be a very sophisticated reader to be able to talk about the pictures and to recognize the numeral, for instance, and there's a lot to compel a child with. A book that we've always had, that some of you may know from your children and grandchildren, Goodnight Moon. It's now been in publication more than 40 years. And we always try to choose books that reflect the ethnicity of the families we work with. In Pittsburgh, the largest minority, as you know, is African-American. Other areas of the country have very large Hispanic or Asian populations. So we've always tried to choose books that would reflect the lives of many of the families we serve. Someone very wisely said to us, you need to find an outlet through an agency that families already trust. So we went to the Allegheny County Health Department and asked them if they would be interested in distributing 1,000 of these packets to the families who bring their children to well-baby clinics for checkups and shots. And they said yes. They had nothing to lose after all. It wasn't costing them much. So we got together 1,000 packets. We hired a woman who had a background in social service to go into the clinics and meet the parents when they came with their youngsters and explain the program and assure them that they weren't getting sucked into a book club that they didn't want or couldn't afford, and to encourage those parents to read to their children and to demonstrate how to do that. That's still a major component of the Gift Book program. We feel that parents hear all the time they should read to their children, but simply to trust a book at a parent without the encouragement and support and belief that you can convey that they can do it, it's very difficult. So we had this first 1,000 packet distribution, and we did a very simple, probably very crude evaluation. I remember that we got back just under 400 responses. The parents had been asked to fill out an evaluation with the social worker when they first came. And then 6 months later, on a return trip to the clinic, 6 months or 12 months, they filled out themselves a second evaluation, which asked them a question, simple questions about whether the children had enjoyed the books and how they used them and did they still have them. We had distributed 1,000 and we got back just under 400, and I thought that was horrible. I thought that the children should get 98% or something, but we were assured that that kind of return was very good. And it was very encouraging. It was also very moving. It was clear from the spelling and the grammar of some of the responses that the parents had really been cheated by the education system, had very low literacy skills, and yet their passionate involvement in the future of their children was evident. One I remember in particular was that any child needs book. So she couldn't even articulate what she would have said to us verbally. They're very hamstrung when it comes to expressing things in them. So we were encouraged and we went on to get more funding and to broaden the scope. Initially, we were under the umbrella of the health department because we weren't incorporated as a nonprofit. We had to have somebody to receive the funds and pay our bills. Then we realized that we weren't going to be limited to health facilities, and we needed to broaden, and that's when we became an affiliate of the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. I should here acknowledge the wonderful help that was given to us by Robert Kronberger, who came as director just shortly after we began, and who tragically died last winter. But he was always our support and our advocate. Well, we went on to broaden the scope, and we have developed three other programs in addition to the Gift Book program. Most of you probably know that there are many adults in this community and other communities who don't have fluent reading skills and who are served by agencies like the Greater Pittsburgh Literacy Council and Goodwill and Bidwell. There are a number of agencies that have tutoring programs. We realized, and in talking to them, that one of the greatest incentives for adults to undertake that very difficult task, imagine what it's like to have to say at 30 or 40, I can't read, I'm going to start to learn. Very tough on the adults. But one of the incentives for them was that they wanted to be able to read to their children, and they wanted to be able to help them with homework. But one of the barriers to their doing that was that they didn't have children. So we developed a program called Read Together, which Nancy Berkowitz now volunteers in. We recruit and train volunteers And we matched them. Initially, it was with the children who came to the library for their tutoring sessions. Now it's much broader. But we matched them with a child who doesn't have a rich and varied read-aloud experience at home. And once a week, the volunteer and the child meet together in a library in Pittsburgh or now beyond, out in Wilkinsburg and some of the other outlying areas. And they meet to share books and games and talk and just to make reading a really exciting and enjoyable experience. I now, since I've retired from beginning books, am matched with a most enchanting little girl named Courtney of 4, who's in Head Start, who is just delightful. I don't think she needs me because she's doing very well, but children who are in Head Start are eligible for this program. And that's grown too. We now have a parent support group and bring parents together to give special speakers. For instance, Elizabeth Howard, who's a local, very well-known and wonderful author, wrote one of the books that I'll show you in a minute. She came and talked to parents about using your family experiences to build stories to share with your children. We wanted to do even more for parents, so we developed a program called Parent Education. And we run, we used to call them Read Aloud Parent Clubs, we now call them Raising Reader Parent Clubs, for parents who come to us through Head Start groups, teenage parents, pregnant teenagers, parents who are in a program to combat addictions of one sort or another. And we bring them together to receive, to talk about why it's important to read to children. They're given a book each time they come. And we say, go home, try this with your children, try to read 5, 10, 15 minutes a day, and come back next week and tell us what it's like. And what happens often is that the parents bond together. Sometimes they've known each other very well already. And share their experiences and share their counsel and advice. A mother might say, I tried reading to him, but he won't sit still. He wants to go play with his traps, and he just doesn't seem to be doing what I thought he would do. And clearly the mother had the notion that I used to have, that you sit on the couch with your arm around the child, and the child sits there. And another mother will say, well, maybe he's kind of active physically. Maybe he needs to play. Let him play while you read, and see what happens if you stop at an exciting point. And the mother will come back and say, hey, I'm trying. And when I stopped, he said, go on, go on. So we have to learn to respond to children's different styles of wisdom. So those are the clubs that we run all over the city and again beyond. And then in 1991, in response to the increase of numbers of children who are in childcare outside the home, in family daycare centers or family daycare homes or daycare centers, we developed a program to bring story time to the children in those centers and to support and engage the caregivers in having a print-rich, book-rich environment for their children. That's called Project Beacon. And we work with homes and centers in 5 neighborhoods of the city. We now have 2 story mobiles that visit each home or center once a month so the children can come on and choose a book and have the experience, a library-like experience. We run workshops and a special conference once a year for the caregivers. And this has been not always easy, but very rewarding. Being a child caregiver is a tough job. Imagine taking care of children in your home from 6 in the morning to 6 in the evening all by yourself. Not even time to go to the bathroom, let alone answer the phone or make the children's lunch. It's very pressured. And what we've been able to do is to engage the caregivers in the process, and they see how responsive the children are. And then they see also that it gives them a chance to sit down during the day and have a quiet time and a story time. I lost my thread on that. We have outreach workers, six outreach workers who serve these neighborhoods and drive these vans. You might have seen them around town, and they're usually parked behind the museum when they're not in service. Let me stop and show you some of the other books that we have in addition to these. How many of you remember being read to as children, by the way? How many of you have had the experience of reading to young children now? Yeah, many more of you. It's done much more now, I think. And the explosion of publication of children's books in the years I've been in the field has been so exciting. One of the most exciting things has been the reflection of diversity in the books we have for our children. My experience as a Jewish child growing up in a small town in Massachusetts with only one other Jewish family was that I almost never saw myself in the books I read. My parents provided us with lots of books. We had a wonderful little library. But there weren't books there that reflected the experience of a Jewish child. And certainly African-American children never saw themselves in books except in a degraded kind of pickaninny role with very insulting dialogue. But now, the range of books available to children is absolutely wonderful. I mentioned Betty Howard, Elizabeth Howard, who's written a number of picture books based on her childhood memories. She grew up in Boston, but her family came from Baltimore and was a family long-standing in that town, in that city. And this one, Aunt Flossie's Hats and Crab Cakes Later, is an absolutely wonderful story of an old aunt who never gives anything away and has this wonderful collection of hats and has a story to go with each one. When our grandson, Bill, who's now 11, was a lot younger, this was one of his favorite books. And when he realized that I know Betty and I'm a friend of hers, he said, I'm the luckiest boy in the world. My Grammy knows a world-famous author. But I also brought to show you today some books that I have in my collection that we don't necessarily use in beginning with books, but I thought you might be interested in some of the books on reflecting the Jewish experience that are available now. This one, called Marvin of the Great North Woods, is a quite incredible story, true, based on the writer's father. In the great flu epidemic of 1918, he lived in Duluth, and his parents were petrified that he was going to get sick. He was 10 years old. And they arranged for him to go by himself to a logging camp in the north. He went by train, and then he went by snowshoe across the snow, and he was met by someone and taken to this logging camp where he became the accountant. He was the one who knew how to keep the books. The man was supposed to be doing it, didn't. And he was befriended by these big French-Canadian loggers who didn't have much of a language in common. But he worked there all winter, and in spring, when the epidemic was over, he went home. It sounds like fiction, but it's true. And there are a number of books that picture the immigrant experience, when Jesse came across the sea, and soon Anala, books about the great migration from Eastern Europe, usually, to the U.S., if you're looking for a gift book for a child of, say, 6 or 7, this is a most poignant story of a very well-known author and illustrator for children named Aliki. And what she's done is to describe her childhood experience in a kindergarten in Philadelphia, a child of Greek-speaking parents who knew no English when she went to school, and through her art was able to tell her story to her classmates. A less mentioned the possibilities of becoming involved in beginning the books. There are ways in which you're interested in which you can become involved. You can certainly, we would welcome you as a Read Together volunteer. We use volunteers in other capacities. And of course, not to be shy about it, we always have our begging bowls out. We do an annual appeal every year asking for contributions. Now, I think I'd like to stop for a few minutes and take questions if there are questions. Yes? It's tough. It is tough. All the libraries have computers. And, for instance, if you're trying to read to a child near the computer station in the library, there's a lot of distraction. But we keep going. And computers are very seductive. And I don't mean to underestimate their power or their both as tools and as a source of entertainment and of information. But it's hard sometimes. And we keep going. Of course, the libraries are wrestling with this question of freedom of information and pornography on the computers and how you protect young children from access to that, but that's fortunately not within our bailiwick. Yes? Right, absolutely.
And also acting them out.
And I bet they did. But to, that's wonderful. And you made the point that you would go to the library and bring books. There are many classrooms of preschool and public school that don't have good access. When we were starting Project Beacon and we went around and visited daycare centers that we thought might participate, we were appalled. I remember going to one center that had about 40 or 50 children and there were maybe a dozen raggedy golden books in the bookcase, and that was it. Well, you can't make readers if you don't have the material to do it. Just to follow up on your remark that you hear people stop you on the street, I was talking to one of our outreach workers the other day who works in this Project Beacon with daycare children. This is to illustrate the long-term effect. And she's telling me about a little boy whom she knew first as an infant, maybe 2 or 3 months old, in a daycare center. And she'd been visiting his daycare centers for 5 or 6 years. She said, now he's in kindergarten, and he comes to the library, home library, every day after school, and he does his homework sitting right here, which she had at the corner of her desk. But he comes in and he does his homework with her. And clearly, she's established a very warm bond, but he also now sees the library as a terrific place to go for all kinds of reasons. Yeah.
How large is your organization?
Well, in terms of staff, we now, Betty and I started sharing one full-time job in this part-time social worker in this budget of $27,000. We now have about 25 staff members and a budget of close to $1 million. And that's happened in 14 years, 15 years. The programs like Project Beacon, the daycare one, the Read Together, the gift book, well, all of those are concentrated in Western Pennsylvania, mostly Allegheny County, but beyond, too. We work very closely with the people in the Mon Valley with their kindergarten program. But we make it possible for other people to replicate their programs, and we're hoping in a year or two to establish a training institute where we bring people to Pittsburgh from all over the country and give them 3-4 days of training and send them home. And we've had kind of offshoots of mostly the gift book program all over the country, and we even now have a friend in Fiji who came to work with us as a Fulbright scholar and then took the program back to Fiji. So that's the geographic breadth. Is that what you meant? Yeah. Other questions? Well, I certainly would like to invite you to come up and see some of the materials. One of the things we've developed, one of the things we're trying to do is to build our financial base so that it's broader than dependent on foundations and individual contributions, and to develop materials that we can sell. And one of those things is a book called Super Story Times that we developed to help daycare providers give their children a very rich experience. And we also have a video that we use in training and that we sell, and note cards that we sell. And then we market ourselves as trainers. If we go out and do a training for Head Start teachers, they pay us, of course, or somebody does. We can do it for nothing. But it is a constant challenge, as you can imagine, to keep the financial ball in the air.
Yes.
Well, we have done that through telephone surveys, telephone evaluations, and when we hold a club, for instance, the person who's facilitating the club always takes notes and writes up the comments of people. And some of them, the comments, like the one I told you before, have become so poignant that that they become part of our organization vocabulary. One of the families we've worked with for a long time lost their housing, and this mother had 4 children, and she shipped around from one relative to another, and then ended up in a shelter. And one of her little boys, who was in the read together, said to somebody who recorded it, when we're in the shelter, he said, sometimes it's hard to go to sleep, but my mom reads me a story at night, he's snoozing. And it was so moving to think that this child who had lost his environment still had something to hang on to. In fact, one of the organizations we've worked with over the years has been a shelter for women here in Pittsburgh. And they took these gift book packets, and at first they distributed them to the families when they left. But they found that the children had often left their own homes and toys and clothes in haste without being able to bring their possessions. And if they could give them a packet when they came, they immediately had something. And what's more, the mother had something to make bedtime easier for her children. But you're right that writing is often intimidating. And one of the things that has struck me over and over as I've worked with parents is how articulate they are orally, and how inadequate their writing skills are to reflect the intensity and the complexity of their thoughts, because they are as I said, passionate about their children and deeply involved in their children's lives, but the skills that we take for granted have been denied them for whatever complicated reasons. Yes.
If I remember right, in recent history, Hillary Clinton wrote a children's book. How would it relate to this program?
Well, she wrote a book called It Takes a Village, which it's not, I think, for children, but it was to, you know, that's an African saying, now become almost a cliche, but to say that it takes a whole community to raise a child. So it relates to us in that we know that she's has the same goals that we have for good child care and a rich environment for children.
Well, following up on my question concerning perspective, do you have any idea of numbers of children that have been affected over the years?
I don't remember it. I think it may be in this annual report. It's over 100,000, probably. Some of the programs are quite small. Read Together now enrolls maybe 160 children. It's very labor intensive. There are 1,200 children in Project Beacon, the daycare.